Hello, and welcome to podcast 3 of Walking the Path with me, Rita Milios, spiritual Sherpa and holistic wellness coach. This third installment of the Walking the Path series continues our exploration of the 6 steps and stages of the spiritual path. In podcast 1, I presented an overview of the 6 steps and stages in order to lay out for you a vision of the path process from a holistic viewpoint, so that you could see the picture on the puzzle box, as I metaphorically referred to it, before starting to examine the individual pieces of the puzzle and figuring out where they fit with one another. In other words, I wanted to give you a template and a blueprint for navigating this path process. In podcast 2, I offered more details and examples from steps 1 and 2, along with the interpretations and insights that I personally gained as I experienced these past stages. I also gave you some optional homework that you could use, if desired, to help you assess your own experiences in comparison, so that you could more easily discern where you might be on the path and what you might expect next. In addition, I offered some resources that I believe may be helpful to you, including a recommended book list, plus several articles and handouts, all of which you can receive upon request by emailing me at ritamilios@gmail.com. As you can see, these first podcasts are presented as somewhat of a training series, and I highly recommend that you listen to them in order. After we have covered the 6 steps and stages, subsequent podcasts will present material in a less serialized format, and the topics will be more independent and individualized to a specific topic. For instance, intuition, dreams, managing chakra energies, understanding empath capacities, and that kind of thing. For today, in podcast 3, our topic is step 3 on the spiritual path, an in-depth exploration. We will discuss how to discern your personal life plan, the testing period involved with walking the path, which includes information on the dark night of the soul and why people fall away from the path, and finally, responsibilities associated with the path. So let us begin. Do you believe that there's a plan for your life? Do you feel that you have a purpose, a destiny, something you are uniquely qualified for and meant to do? Or do you believe that you are simply here to exist, to have fun and enjoy yourself when you can, but without any innate directive to do something specific with this life you've been given? Most of us have asked ourselves such questions at some point or another, and if you are a person who has consciously chosen to move forward toward greater spiritual development, if you have answered the call to the path, then you aren't likely to be satisfied believing that life just is, that you live the best you can and then you die. You likely look for a reason behind it all. Deep inside, you feel that there must be a purpose for your existence and a personal plan for your life. I believe that everyone has a personal life plan, for each of us is a part of the divine plan, a part of the great tapestry of life. Each of our lives is unique. Each of us are only but one small thread in the tapestry, and yet every thread has a special place, a special function. No life is insignificant. No life is unimportant. Each has a responsibility to the whole. By choosing to consciously follow your path, you choose to take the high road or fast track to spiritual growth. You choose to move forward quickly and to grow as much as you can in one lifetime. For those who choose to take the slow and steady path, though, that is fine too. But it may take another 2,000-year cycle before these folks get another opportunity to move up to the next level on the spiritual spiral. That is why the era we live in today is so important. We have an unprecedented opportunity to take a giant leap to a higher spiritual spiral, if we so choose. Yes, there is a plan for your life, but this was not delivered to you at birth on a magical scroll. It was not planted in your brain so that you just know what it is. However, it is imprinted on your soul, where it awaits your discovery. For part of the plan for our lives is that we should first come to desire it, then to look for it, and to ultimately find it and begin to implement it. That is why it is called a spiritual journey, not a destination. Much of the value we receive by walking the path is found in doing the walk itself. So how do you discover the personal plan for your life? Simply ask and you shall receive. If you truly desire to know your purpose and the plan for your life, and you're willing to go where it directs you, in other words, if you intend to have a life of spiritual service, then you will surely discover the plan for your life. Start by first meditating on the question, reflecting on it, and truly desiring an answer. Then listen to your intuition. Your intuition will guide you toward your ideals, toward your own unique path and the plan for your life. Learn to recognize your own intuition cues and follow up on what you discern to be true intuitions. Then the more you follow your true intuitions, the more your inner self will present them to you. Sometimes our ego selves get wrapped up in the desire to do something or make something happen, and we forget to simply trust and let our inner guidance direct us. We can go off in the wrong direction many times before we finally get frustrated and say in desperation, "I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Please, God, tell me, and I'll do it." Then once we begin listening, we do begin to be directed by our intuition. But how can you tell when your inner voice is really your intuition speaking and not a random thought or wishful thinking instead? How do you know when you're getting a message from your higher self or from your soul? True intuitive messages have something special about them, but what exactly that is, you must discern for yourself, as it is often different for each person. You do, however, have special intuition cues that can be discovered through quiet reflection. The best way to begin noticing and recognizing these cues is to keep an intuition log. Write down each time that you get a feeling or a hunch you feel might be intuitive. Write down also everything that you feel or sense at the same time. Paying special attention to subtle inner sensory reactions such as butterflies in the stomach, a change in your physical state, such as a catch in your breath, or a change in your mental perception, perhaps a light bulb sensation in your head, or a sense of knowingness, or perhaps an urgency about your perceived message. Look also for differences in thought transmission. Perhaps the message sounds different in tone or is delivered in second person rather than in first. You should do this versus I think I should do this. Perhaps the message repeats itself three times is often common, or it feels stronger than normal thoughts or urges. Be open to any small nuances or differences. Intuitions are both fleeting and quiet. They come as the beating of butterfly wings, not as the ringing of a bell. Also, use your dreams, your direct link to your subconscious mind, to help you discover your path in life. Ask for dreams that lead you to an understanding of your life's plan and purpose. I know this does not sound like a simple task, because it isn't. It requires a steady focus of attention to the inner life. That is what is necessary in order to tune in to higher spiritual energies. It requires a mental polarization, a fixed mental focus, and a determined effort to listen for and to hear one's inner voice. Are you willing to put forth the effort and commitment that is required to discover the personal plan for your life? If so, you can become a partner in the great work of progressively unfolding the universal plan. You will be able to directly work with your soul, following spiritual guidance, and doing your part in this great work. Your intuition will lead you to ever greater service and to ever greater rewards. If you truly desire to serve the light, meditate regularly and ask to be shown the purpose and plan for your life. Reflect on your own personal goals and ideals and ask for guidance through dreams and intuitions. While you're meditating on your personal goals, meditate on your spiritual goals as well. Are your personal goals aligned with your spiritual goals? If they are not, it will be difficult for you to discover your life plan and to live your life's purpose. Each of us has a responsibility not only to ourselves, but to those around us as well. If you want good for yourself, you must be willing to do good for the world as well. But if you sincerely intend to follow your path and your personal plan, knowing that these will involve some service to others in addition to yourself, then your life plan will be revealed to you. As you move further along the path, you will come to recognize the difference between your personality or ego desires and intentions that have to do with your personal life and your spiritual goals, or the goals that your soul has for you and for your life. you will come to understand that soul intentions deal with group needs and achievements, not those of any one individual. While the soul's goals and intention most often tend to enfold one's personal goals within the goals for the group or the whole, and so this does bring about positive and helpful results for the individual, that is not the soul's main focus and objective. For this reason, at a certain juncture on the path, you will be faced with a test of sorts to determine if you are truly ready and worthy to receive the greatly expanded awareness and access to higher spiritual energies, and therefore the increased potentials that come with that access. This testing period marks the great turning point in your spiritual journey, for it is a time when you either acknowledge and fully embrace your commitment and willingness to serve, or you choose not to, and you simply remain at the stage that you are currently in terms of your spiritual growth, and that choice would be perfectly fine. No one is ever forced to grow spiritually or coerced into it. It is a 100% free will choice, but because the stakes are so high, meaning that the power and potential involved in moving forward are so great, they cannot be given lightly, lest they be put at risk of being misused for personal and personality gain only, and not with the desires and intentions of the soul having priority. So Spirit, in its wisdom, has created a way to separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, and allow only those who truly align with their soul's intentions to move forward after a certain point. In esoteric terms, this is called the third initiation, or the third great movement up the spiritual spiral of consciousness evolution. By the way, you can read more about the topic of initiations in my book, Planetary Initiation. Email me for information on how to get a copy. The idea and process of initiation has been a part of the path process since the beginning, but until recently, only a few average people were privy to this information, as it was part of ancient wisdom teachings that have been passed down secretly to highly evolved individuals and what are termed mystery schools for thousands of years. Today, however, much of the ancient wisdom teaching has become available to many more people, and you don't have to be a priest or a shaman to access it. This change has come about because of our collective advancement on the spiritual spiral. Today, more people than ever before are able to take this special step on the spiritual spiral, one where the hierarchy, or ascended spiritual masters, recognize the attainment and begin to make themselves available to help and assist those who achieve this access as part of the hierarchy's group goals and intentions for humanity. So, you can see that this testing period marks an important crossroad in your spiritual growth and why it is necessary for only those who fully align with their soul's intentions to pass this important test. Before being accepted into the periphery of the hierarchy, as it's termed, you must first pass your initiation test, which often involves the thing that is most dear to you as a personality and the thing that is the most difficult for you to achieve at the same time. The test consists of something different for each individual, but in essence, it causes you to have to really make up your mind whether or not you would choose to commit in full conscious awareness, and therefore will defer your personal will to your soul's will when there seems to be a choice between the two. In other words, can you truly say and mean, "Thy will, not my will, be done"? It sounds like a simple thing, but it is not. For it requires you to put your commitment to the plan above all else, even when it appears that your own happiness, at least as you see it at the moment, may need to be moved into second rather than first place. Most of the struggles we receive in our lives, especially if we are spiritual, can be viewed as learning opportunities and opportunities for growth. Your testing period reflects this common experience, but on a much larger scale. Is the importance of the choice you are being asked to make and the perceived potential for personal loss that you feel is involved at the time that makes it more consequential and makes the struggle greater and more intense. A common experience during this testing period is what we call the dark night of the soul. This is when you feel that things are falling apart. You may have been moving along nicely, gaining confidence in your ability to walk the path, and gaining confidence you have assistance, perhaps in the form of angels or guides, or simply from your own intuitive guidance and inner wisdom. But suddenly all that changes, If you're like most people, there will come a time when you feel like you've been abandoned, as it were, by your spiritual helpers. Suddenly you can no longer feel their presence. Your ability to receive intuitive messages is greatly diminished. You no longer have the confidence of knowing that you're being guided and protected. You begin to wonder, why are you suddenly without spiritual support in your hour of greatest need? You may wonder if you are indeed on the right path and whether you can continue to move forward if you no longer have access to these spiritual allies, if they can no longer be counted on to provide you with their valuable support. This seemingly disastrous event is not, however, what it may seem to be at the time. It is an important part of the test. By this abandonment, you're being asked to really consider whether you would be willing to continue on with your commitment to the path if indeed this were to be the case, if your path were not to be made easier by having the assistance of spiritual beings. If you had only yourself to count on, would you still be committed? Would you still defer to thy will over your own will? The answer to that question is what the test is all about. In the end, we must all be willing and able to walk the path alone, for only then can we be sure that we are really committed to it. Fortunately, the dark night of the soul experience itself is a test. It is only a test. Our spiritual allies don't really abandon us. They merely move back and away for a while so that we can honestly and fully discern our own intentions and desires without influence from them, or from any expectation that we might have about their role in our path journey. Once your spiritual allies determine that you have made an honest, sincere decision and that you do want to continue on your path, even though if doing so might mean going it alone at times, without the assurance of their assistance, they feel free to return, and you're usually able to sense their presence once again. It is important to understand this testing process because many people give up on their path walk at this point because they're not confident that they can go it alone. But the truth is that Spirit never asks anything of you that you do not have the capacity to do. And if you're thinking that now that you know the truth, that your allies will come back after their apparent abandonment and that you can get away with professing a level of commitment to yourself and to your spiritual helpers that isn't really there, then you would be wrong. Just as you can't fool Mother Nature, you can't fool your inner self, your soul self. So take this time to truly, consciously, and earnestly determine your true desires and intentions regarding your path progression. It and you deserve nothing less. So now, let's look at some examples of these dark night of the soul experiences. A seemingly ordinary dilemma faced by one of my clients illustrates the personal way that the testing process can manifest. The client's test had to do with weight. She had been overweight for many years, but could not seem to do anything about it. Finally, through past life regression hypnosis, we released all the past life ties to her tendency to be overweight. We discovered that in one past life, she had died in a snowstorm. At that time, she had vowed that from then on, she would always maintain enough fat to provide a shield for her body. In another past life experience, she had been a pretty woman in England in the 1800s, and a priest had chastised her for having too much pride. Her current weight was one way that she was still trying to show this priest that she really didn't have too much pride. After releasing these lingering mental error messages and doing other work to build up her self-esteem, the client decided to let God make the decision about whether or not she would continue to be heavy in this lifetime. She realized that she could now choose to be either way, heavy or thin, and that either would be okay. She decided that she would turn the decision over to God and would ask him, "Thy will be done." If God perhaps had a reason for wanting her to be heavy, maybe as an example to others, that one's size need not affect their ability to appreciate and love themselves, then saying yes to God's will and allowing that message to be delivered was more important to her than was her previous goal of achieving a culturally preferred look, no matter how long she had considered that to be of utmost importance. Ironically, however, by finally letting go of her struggle, this client did do what she had been unable to do for much of her life. She lost a considerable amount of weight. This kind of paradox happens a lot, Once we give up the struggle to have a certain outcome and defer to whatever our higher will chooses for us, then we like as not will get our original goal accomplished anyway. For it is not the content of our desires that is important. It is the purpose behind them that matters most. It is the act of making choices based on something greater than our own desires that ends our struggle and internal conflict. And that is what becomes the thing that is different, that makes it possible for our goal to be accomplished. My client's inner self wanted her to be okay with herself in whatever way her body manifested. And until she stopped believing that only one certain kind of physical appearance was okay, her inner wisdom would not allow her to reach that goal, because to do so would perpetrate a mistaken and harmful perception about herself. So, as most often happens, when she allowed her soul wisdom to make the choice, she not only learned a valuable lesson, but she also freed her mind to allow her original goal to be met as well, because this goal was no longer tied to a belief that was unhealthy and injurious to herself and to others as well, because it perpetrated a negative cultural expectation. While the above test may not appear to be dramatic, believe me, it was for the client involved. As you can see, a personal test is not so much about the actual decision to be made, but in how the person goes about making their decision. In all cases, the person usually feels that they have done, that they have come to a dead end, that they cannot figure out a solution to a problem that is very meaningful to them on their own. The testing comes from whether they decide to listen to outside sources, other people's opinions, cultural norms, or even their own logical mind, or whether they choose to listen to their inner self, the source of their intuitive guidance, and most of all, if they are willing to follow that guidance, even if it appears to go against what they think they want at the time. In this case, the client decided that she did not have to choose which was the right presentation for her, as a heavy or as a thin person, but instead she would defer the choice so that her higher power could make it for her. And that choice changed everything. That was an example of a personal test. But many times our test is more of a spiritual nature, and there are some common spiritual tests that many of us regularly face. A big one is trust. A great many of us today are working on the need to trust, and indeed, the sense that we can safely give out our trust as well. One client that I worked with had much responsibility as a counselor who helped other people make decisions all day long as part of her job. But in her own life, she had an extremely hard time making decisions because she was afraid of making the wrong decision. Only when she learned to get in touch with her inner guidance and to trust that it only made good decisions with her highest good in mind as well as the highest good of others, was she able to make the life decisions that allowed her to move forward on her path. We all need to trust more, but trusting is so hard when you don't feel in control. However, it is only when we begin to feel comfortable with letting go of our need to control that we can feel safe. For safety is allowing God to do and allowing ourselves to simply be. When we allow the plan to work through us, we become one with it. And nothing but good can come from that. Another common spiritual test concerns discernment, especially learning to discern when we are receiving true intuitive messages, coming to know for ourselves what is truth to us and what isn't. Is very important. Today there is much information available to the seeker. I recall a visit I made a while back to a regional metaphysical store that left my head reeling. There were thousands of titles to choose from, and each one offered someone ideas of truth. But after 2 hours of looking, I came away with only one book that rang true to me, and even then this book contained certain segments that I could not buy into. Upon reflection about this, I realized that I had become, over time, much more discerning. I am no longer automatically impressed by claims of channeled material. I am not easily swayed by promises of enlightenment. In fact, I am not so easily convinced of any so-called truths. I now instead consider the information purported to be truth, and in the end make my own decisions about the validity of it based on whether or not it feels true to my own internal intuitive sensors. I encourage you too to use your own internal intuitive sensing power to discern what is truth for you. For there is often not one universal truth that fits every situation. Along with discernment and trust, many of us have in common a spiritual test involving patience. I have to admit, I have never naturally been a patient person. I've always had a tendency to want to keep pushing forward, always looking for the next event or project, always in a hurry to get to the next challenge. The test of patience has been a very difficult one for me. For years, early in my path process, I felt as if I was holding my breath, knowing that I was supposed to do something, but not knowing what it was that I was supposed to do or how to get it done. Painfully, I learned that the path itself cannot be hurried. We can hurry ourselves along if we choose a spiritual fast track, but we cannot make our life plan and destiny be revealed to us any sooner than we are ready for it ourselves, and it will not be revealed any sooner than Spirit deems it appropriate for us. Knowing and planning in it, Spirit's infinite wisdom, the multiple paths and contingencies that need to be manifested and orchestrated in order to facilitate the coordinating of not only our individual plan and life's work, but that of others as well, whose paths and life plans will intersect with ours. For once again, soul plans, soul scripts, are written with group needs and intentions in mind, not just individual ones. I sometimes joke that I have come to gain patience by default, by so often being forced to wait for my intentions to be manifested that over time I've gotten used to waiting, and I've come to expect the wait and thus struggle less against it. And through experience, I've come to realize that the universe has perfect timing, even if it is not my timing. So I've learned that acceptance, too, is part of the test and the lesson of patience. I've learned that by doing less pushing and having more patience and allowing divine orchestration the time that is necessary for it to do its work, that better outcomes do result for myself and for all concerned. So it comes full circle. I now recognize that pushing is resistance, resistance to allowing what is to be. It's also a sign of reluctance to trust and to have patience. After taking many detours and coming up against many brick walls, I've learned that the things that are meant to be for me will actually manifest faster and with less pain if I simply choose to trust and have more patience. After all, I'm really not the one in charge. So now we come to the question of, why do people fall away from the path? Well, as you can imagine from what we just discussed, walking the path involves hard work. And frankly, it can sometimes be quite scary. Most of us, if given the choice, tend to take the easy path, which is the road most traveled. Consciously taking on such intense work as that which is involved in fully committing to the spiritual path and sticking with it over the long haul, well, that can be quite burdensome for many people. It requires an ongoing and regularly upgraded commitment to one's initial decision. And not everyone is cut out for this. As I've said several times before, it's okay if people, you included, decide to step off the path and take a break for a while, or to even end your journey on the path for this lifetime, at whatever point you happen to be. There is truly no requirement to continue and no need for apology or guilt if you choose to leave the path. Everyone will eventually make the entire journey that has been determined by the universal plan. But we have free will to choose both the speed and the timing with which we proceed. Each of us has a unique soul history, karma, and destiny, knowing that no matter how your path progresses, it is right for you. The option to consciously choose to move faster and move forward more quickly and steadily is offered to everyone, but it is not something that will feel right for everyone to do. As long as you follow your intuition and your guidance, you will make the right decision about how you should travel the path and how you will carry out your life plan. As well as being hard, I mentioned earlier that the path can sometimes feel scary. This is often because it involves the unknown. In fact, the path embodies the unknown. Each step forward on the path is one that leads you somewhere where you have never been before. We humans seem to have an innate fear of the unknown, which is the main reason that many people fear death. But knowledge dispels the fear of the unknown. Unfortunately, more and more, ancient wisdom teachings are becoming available to us all the time. Not only that, with the availability of the internet, we can now conveniently have easy access to this ancient wisdom material. The only caveat to partaking of this opportunity is that it requires discernment to sort out which sources of information are reliable and that resonate as truth to you. Empower yourself through education, but be diligent about practicing discernment regarding which teachings you integrate into your belief system. As always, your intuitive guidance system will be your best tool for making the right choices about which educational resources are right for you. Along the lines of gaining education, another reason that people may fall off the path is that in the past, until recently, they may not have had access to teachers and peers with whom they could communicate and share information, questions, and experiences. Again, the internet now provides a wealth of opportunity for meeting like-minded people through different chat and support groups, blogs, and websites. The same suggestion regarding discernment applies here as well, of course. But the best part of this opportunity is that no one any longer need feel alone or feel that they don't know where to find the information they are seeking. Finally, the most common reason that people leave the path is a reluctance to make a commitment because they fear commitment. Fear of commitment is pretty common, as most of us generally like to keep our options open and to feel that we can be flexible and not boxed in, no matter what the circumstance. And since commitment is such a large issue regarding the choice to walk the path, it can feel a bit overwhelming at times. In a later podcast, after we have covered this series on the six steps and stages of the path process, I will share with you some of what I call the potholes that are to be avoided by walking the path. However, there are both reasons and rewards for those who diligently continue to move forward, regardless of how fast or slow, and whether or not they choose to take a break now and then. For those who tenaciously stick to the path, this seems to be more of a calling and a sense of duty and destiny. I think those like myself who feel this way perhaps came into this current lifetime with a soul intent and a soul pact or mission to provide a particular service that requires that the path journey be a part of the fulfillment of that mission. While this may be true for some of us, it in no way means that our place and role in the universal plan is any more important than anyone else's. Each of us is, as I said, merely a thread in the universal tapestry, and each thread, whether it be a gilded thread or a plain one, is equally important and is equally essential for the perfection of the whole. Whatever your role, your life plan, know that it is valued and valuable as part of the whole. Still, no matter where you are on your path right now, at some point you will progress further than you are today. So it is a good idea to look ahead and consider what lies before you. Along with the gifts of the path, which we will cover in our next podcast, number 4 in this series, I want to outline for you today some of the responsibilities that are associated with the path. People who willingly walk the path and feel committed to the path process are often called light workers because they work to bring in the spiritual light, expand it, spread it to others, and to the planet in general, so that all can benefit from this positive and healing energy. Today, there are millions of dedicated light workers all over the globe, and they work individually and in small and large groups, both in person and through the internet. While there is no club to join, and most often no official group association, these light workers are joined through their dedication to the sacred work of aiding the universal spirit in healing and evolving our planet and all who live on it. For most who consider themselves light workers, there are a few common goals that they can take on as responsibilities in their service to humanity and to spirit itself. These responsibilities fall into 4 main areas. The first responsibility of a light worker is to be a channel for spiritual energies. This does not mean acting as a medium channeling information, but instead acting as a living transformer of the electrical light-based impulses that are really what spiritual energies are. by first bringing into your body, then stepping these energies down and returning them back to the world by way of your own energy field or aura. For those who are fairly new to the path, this metaphor of an electrical transformer, which by the way is something that either steps up or steps down electrical current when it passes from one circuit to another, may seem odd. But as you educate yourself and evolve yourself, you will come to realize that just as the ancient wisdom material states, spiritual energy is electrical in nature. And as you likely do know, our bodies run on electrical energy. It is electricity that powers the transfer of information between nerve cells in our brain and that sends out impulses to keep our heart beating, among other things. And as all energy workers are aware, it is electrical and magnetic energy that makes up the human aura. When we develop and grow spiritually, what we are really doing is increasing our vibrations, our electrical and magnetic vibrations, and therefore increasing our compatibility with the higher levels of electromagnetic energy that spirit beings resonate at. And as each person increases their personal vibration, which is essentially the meaning of moving higher on the spiritual spiral, and then they interact with other people, the person's energy field with the higher vibrations will entrain and pull up or increase the vibrations of the other person when they're in close contact. In this way, each of us who deliberately raises our own personal vibrations and energy fields are in effect helping to raise the vibrations of all others around us as well. The second responsibility of a light worker is to recognize where you can be of service. This involves first discovering your individual life plan and choosing to follow that plan. Once you do that, your unique spiritual gift will in time be revealed to you, and you can then begin to offer your gift to the world. We will cover the concept of sharing, finding and sharing your spiritual gift in much more detail in our next podcast. The third responsibility of a light worker is called, in esoteric terms, freedom of movement within the hierarchy. This means that with your increased vibrational level, you can begin to reach the outer circle of the realm of the spiritual masters that is known as the hierarchy or angelic realm. And you can, through meditation, especially group meditation, access this higher level of spiritual energy and become an active participant in helping these evolved beings implement their plan for humanity. Each of us individually, once we are part of the group of light workers, can become distributors of the energy sent down the pipeline, as it were, from hierarchy to us as a human group. In other words, not only can you work with your personal life plan, you can also contribute to the universal life plan as well, by working as a partner with the hierarchy. I know this seems like a lot to take in, and we will deal more with this topic in later podcasts, but for now, this is a start. The fourth and final responsibility in our discussion of responsibilities that you will take on if you commit to your life plan and become a light worker is to be willing to work toward making higher spiritual contacts and affiliations, such as working within a group, to gain access to the realm of the hierarchy so that you can receive intuitive instructions on how to do your part in the work that they take on for the benefit of humanity. This is a standard part of the process that my personal meditation group utilizes when we meet together. In addition to sending out healing and loving vibrations to those we know are in need, we also ask for and attune ourselves to any incoming, what we call downloads or message transmissions that our higher guides and angelic beings wish to share with us. In other words, we ask if there are any assignments that we can, if we so choose, of course, take part in. Often the return messages will involve suggestions like sending energy and healing to the planetary grid or to the protective energy grid of our own neighborhood and community, that kind of thing. My personal meditation group is made up of a relatively small and very highly evolved group of people, and we do have good access to some very high spiritual energies. This is something that we have earned by doing both our individual meditation work over the years and our group meditation work as well. In later podcasts, I will share with you an example of a meditation group format that you can use if you wish to build up your own group energy and gain over time, as we did, your own group guide or spiritual contact person who can assist you in reaching the higher realms. All these things and more are possible for you to experience if you decide to continue walking the path and being open to discover and embrace the plan for your life. Although there will be challenges, the rewards greatly outweigh these, and I can promise you that you will not regret if you make this momentous decision. So, that's it for today. Thanks so much for listening. Please feel free to contact me with questions, comments, or requests for resources. And I'd love to have your feedback on this or previous podcasts. If you are a therapist or a coach and you would like to take part in a future planned Zoom gathering of therapists and coaches to discuss and share techniques and ideas for working with people in their spiritual path journeys, please contact me at britamilios@gmail.com and let me know that you'd like to be included on the Zoom gathering notification list. To everyone who listened today, thanks again. I wish you always blessings on your path.